My name is Barbara Gadisi. I'm the Vaccines for Children coordinator in New Jersey and have been the coordinator for the past 14 years. Recently, we just started looking at adolescent rates, and it kind of caused a little furor. So my esteemed colleague, Ruth Gubinick, and I today are going to tell you what we found out in the past year about adolescent vaccines in New Jersey. New Jersey. Everybody makes fun of New Jersey. All they overhear is it's Turnpike, what exit are you from, or landfills, right? But I just wanted to show you that we're called the Garden State for a reason. There's a lot of farmlands. If you see, I included some pictures. The top picture is up in Paterson, New Jersey, which is up North Jersey. The picture with the river behind it is Lambertville, which is Central Jersey. And the picture alongside of that is Atlantic City in Southern New Jersey. But we are a state of 8.7 million people. And we are between two large cities, New York and Philadelphia, and that's the reason why we get made fun of. But we are a beautiful state. Just want to let you know the reason why we started looking at adolescent rates was because we did notice an increased number of cases of pertussis in adolescents, also an increased number of cases in meningococcal disease. Then we also had the new vaccines that were licensed. In New Jersey, we did not have a Hep A recommendation. I did not start giving Hep A until 2006, only because if you remember, everybody routinely was given hepatitis A if they were west of the Mississippi River. We were not. So we just recently started with the Hep A. We had school regulations for MMR2 and meningococcal, which was in our college law. And we do have revised school regs for this year of September 2008, which will include Tdap and Menactra at age 11 years. We also have a flu for daycare, which is, I believe, we're first, Monica? Okay. Yeah, stay tuned. It should be a big battle. Just want to go through some of these stages and tasks of adolescence. As everyone knows, if you have a teenager, adolescence is a time where you go through a little bit of struggle. You're trying to find who you are, what your purpose is. You need a little bit of autonomy. And you start through the adolescence, pre-adolescence, about 8 years of age. And I'm sure everyone knows of the 17-year-old, some 30 or 40-year-old that never gets out of the late adolescent stage, right? There's always somebody who is still a child when they're still in their 30s and 40s. So it may last a lifetime. There are several factors that influence adolescence. All these psychosocial factors work together. So you can see the complexity of being a teenager and trying to find your way through all these things that influence you in the community, your family, and your school and peers. I just want to talk a little bit about the juvenile justice system, which I have been working with since 2005. Juvenile justice system in New Jersey started in 1995, and primarily it's to provide safe housing for those children who committed an offense, and also to give them some type of a life skill. Average age in the juvenile justice system is 17.2 years. As you can see, it's mostly males, 8,000 to 1,000, although females are on the increase. African Americans make up 66.2%, while Caucasians make up 12.9% of the population in the system. Most admissions of these children are probation violations and commitments for other reasons. Types of programs they have are residential, where they actually live in community homes. It's less restrictive and they're allowed to go out and do day jobs or work. Secure care, which is full care, which they are in lockdown. And day programs, where most of these children are on probation and they're not necessarily removed from the home. Back in 2005, we were contacted by the juvenile justice system and asked if we could sign up, at that time, 5 sites by the doctor who was the head of the system. So at that point in time, we started looking at, we figured we had adolescents in the system, we might as well start looking at the numbers, and Shannon and BioWillis came out to do a pilot study in New Jersey in 2006. What they found was that the JJCs were not using Tdap or Menactra, and the primary reason for not using Menactra was the Guillain-Barré scare. They were not aware of the immunization status of their clients. So in other words, when they were sent through the system, they were just being given vaccines on intake. By the time their school records would come, most of these children were placed or out of the system. What they did give, however, was IPV, hepatitis B, MMR, TD, pneumococcal, and flu. They actually continued using TD until 2007. In 2007, through many, many, many educational in-services and site visits, we actually got them up from 5 to 17 residential and secure care facilities. They ordered and began using Minatra, Tdap, and Hep A, and also there's one residential secure care that houses women, and we actually started to get them to use HPV. I'm going to introduce now to you Ruth Gubernick, who will discuss the Adolescent Immunization and Community Partnership Program.
Thank you, Barbara. Besides the JJC program that Barbara's been primarily involved in, I've been working through the Pediatric Council on Research and Education, which is the foundation of the American Academy of Pediatrics New Jersey chapter, on a project that's been focused on adolescents. I have been the program director, have a co-director, and the past few years with funding that the state of New Jersey received from the CDC, the Vaccine Preventable Disease Program funding, we were doing a childhood immunization project that was working with primary care practices in a learning collaborative setting, and we were working with any practices who were interested in participating and working to improve practice of immunization service delivery, and we were doing that for about 3 years and really making strides in improving practice, and then the funding from CDC changed. And they said, "Oh, okay. Now we really need to expand with the new vaccines and the new focus, for adolescents." And we thought about what we had been doing the 3 years and the successes we had and some of the issues. And we said, it's really hard working with practices that are all over the place. And we really wanted to come back and focus on a community and be community based and focused. So in the year 2007. We really spent a lot of time recruiting partners to participate in this initiative and practices. And at this point, we have been refunded and we're really ready to get the ball rolling with these practices. Now, as all of you know, recruiting primary care practices, even if you're working in a community, it takes a lot of time and a lot of energy. And we've been working in the greater Newark community, which includes Irvington, East Orange, and Orange in addition to Newark. And we now have 25 sites that are working with us, and that includes it's primary care, pediatrics, health centers, federally qualified health center, the Department of Health in Newark, and school-based health. And we are also we have school-based health clinics in Camden working with us as well, because we are planning and hoping to spread to other communities in the coming year. So we spend a lot of time with our recruitment. In addition to working the PCORE group and the State Department of Health and Senior Services vaccine preventable disease folks, we have been working really closely with, we didn't want to start creating a new community organization. In the Newark area, there's a wonderful coalition called EMIC, the Essex Metro Immunization Coalition. And their coordinator, Jane Sarwin, who some of you may know, said, "Gee, we've decided as a coalition that we really want to expand our mission to include adolescents." And we said, "Great, that's perfect. We're going to work together." And they have all the partners already at the table. So, we didn't want to reinvent the wheel, and that's been a really great opportunity. The other group that we've partnered with is the Statewide Parent Advocacy Network, which just about every state has an organization like that. It includes organizations like Family Voices, those groups that are focused primarily on special health care needs, but now they've really expanded and they see that everybody, all children have and adolescents have special health care needs. And they're really the ones who have been working with us. They did the focus groups statewide, having the adolescents tell us what kind of things would really motivate them to get immunized. They're the ones who are working with the teens now in two high schools to create PSAs and a website that's peer-to-peer. So they've been a great partner. So if you haven't tapped into a group like that, I would suggest doing that. And the Association of School Nurses, the Secondary School Nurses, the Give It a Shot materials, the poster from that program with the half face measles and regular face, chicken pox, that's the thing that they said, ew, we don't want to look like that. We'll make sure we're immunized. The other part of this year was to really, for the first time, be able to gather some state-specific adolescent immunization. And I just want to share with you, thanks to one of the public health reps, supervising public health reps, she went into Family Health Center and a few primary care sites because we really wanted to try to figure out what protocol we were going to use. You know, are we going to use COCASA? And these slides just show you some of our preliminary data, site-specific. The varicella rates are pretty low because using COCASA, we found an issue with not being able to document that whether or not the child had had the disease. So it looks artificially low, but we've figured out how to fix the protocol so that we can count those kids as up to date if they had disease. And you can see that the rates are this was a look back. We took 15-year-olds and looked back to the vaccines that they had. But at this point, I think we've decided to look at 13-year-olds and use those as our measurement points. But listening to speakers this week, I think we might even just look at the 12-year-olds, because then we can really see the impact of our interventions this year. Here you get a local health department. Just this is on a range of 0 to 50, so even though they look pretty much the same, but they're only at half scale, so they have a ways to go too. In the next few minutes, I just want to share with you some of the highlights of this past year. We developed a curriculum that's adolescent focused. And in New Jersey, we didn't want to just focus on adolescent immunizations. It's really focused on adolescent health and well-being. So we talk about these topics that have to do with adolescent autonomy, the fact that they're risk takers and that they're, limit testers at this age. So that the whole curriculum is really based on being on adolescent well care within the context of the medical home, and you can see that we go on the two slides Barbara showed at the beginning are part of the curriculum, and when we get to the point where we talk about protective factors and the fact that these are some of the things that really have an impact on improving adolescent health care and well-being, that then gives us the opportunity to talk about immunizations as another way to protect adolescents, and as part of that we talk about about the vaccines that they should be giving, but the fact that at this age the children aren't coming back for their well care, and how they really should be familiar with the recommendations of the Society for Adolescent Medicine, who are recommending the three distinct adolescent platforms, and use your existing systems. If you use an immunization registry for your younger kids, expand it for adolescents. The multiple shots, non-comprehensive visits, all the things that they already are doing for their younger children really need to be expanded. Then we take some time and talk about each one of the adolescent focused vaccines, and this is just an example. We use pertussis in a similar format to what we saw last night, for those of us who went to the aquarium presentation. We frame the problem there's a slide missing. Okay. The first slide would show the incidence of pertussis and how it's scaled upward the last several years. And then we talk about how the source cases of infants are the adolescents and the young adults. And again, emphasize that's the transmission of disease to the infants. And then talk about the vaccines in particular and the AIC and the ACIP recommendations. We do that for meningococcal, HPV, varicella, hep B, and then turn our focus to, those are the issues. What are the strategies that you can use to improve practice? And how and why do you need to incorporate these platforms into your, to establish these well visits for adolescents? and talk about the opportunity to use the physicals for camp and sports. And, you know, none of this is new, but the other thing, too, is that I heard several times this week is the real impact. If they're recommending these vaccines, then the families are going to know that and feel that it's important. And you know, make sure that they are all on the same page. When we do our educational opportunity, it's about an hour and a half. It's usually at lunch. You know, it's an epic style presentation. We don't just talk to the physicians. It's everybody from the front door to the back door in a health center or an office. And we bring a team in, usually a physician trainer, someone from the local health department, and a community resource, or from either a community organization or agency, so that they have an opportunity to really get to know their community as well. And we really tailor the presentation to what their needs are and give them a chance to figure out what they want to work on improving. And these are some additional things that we cover. And, you know, we've added talking to teens, because that in itself is an art form that a lot of them are not comfortable with. By the end, it's a very active dialogue. We're not just lecturing to them for that hour and a half, but we give them the opportunity as a group to say, okay, all right, we've shared a lot of information with you today. We've talked about, you know, what you're doing or not doing. You found out that, you know, that this physician in your practice is giving, you know, all three doses on a visit, the Tdap and the meningococcal and starting the female on HPV. And gee, over here, your colleague here is bringing them back three times for those three vaccines. So sometimes it's very interesting to see that they think they're all doing the same thing, and then when they start discussing it, because, you know, just talking about those things is often not what's going on a day-to-day basis, that might be the one thing that they're going to work on changing. And so we ask them right then and there, okay, identify some things, and who's going to be in charge of this? Who's going to be the one who's going to take ownership? And what do you need from us? Do you need resources? Do you need information? You know, what's going to make this work? What's going to make the change happen? Some of the challenges overall between the juvenile justice system in summary, you know, they have had an issue with getting records, and then not all the vaccines are always available because storage issues, especially for varicella. With the practices, we continue to have they have concerns about different their reimbursement and the costs. And as I said, during this first year, you know, recruitment is always a labor intensive. Having staff shortages at the State Health Department, we're now looking at how we, as a PCOR, the Pediatric Council program staff, how can we go in and help do COCASAs? Can we be kind of deputized to be able to do this? So, you know, does that require an IRB? You know, can we do that? Are we doing program evaluation by doing things like chart reviews, or is this considered research and it has to be IRB? I mean, all these things are the questions that we're trying to answer at this point. We've learned some lessons in the last year. One of the successes that Barbara certainly has had is that now JJC centers are using Tdap and Menactra. They're also using the HPV for the females. The school-based centers have had access to the registry, but they haven't figured out how to be able to use it to be able to put records in, and that's been a real barrier for them. But they really want to hang in there, and they want our help. We've been able to now tweak our protocol so that we'll be able to do data collection. That a year from now, we'll be able to really say, okay, look at the progress that you've made. All of the practices that we've spoken to, private practices, they're not outreaching to their adolescents. Some of them are just starting to outreach to their younger kids using the registry system. And so, but they see the value. They're really appreciative of these new vaccines, and they want to use the platforms to be able to, as a hook, to get these kids in for well care. And we're really heartened by the fact that this is just the beginning of our this past year of our real adolescent focus improving adolescent immunizations, and we are looking forward to having the opportunity to evaluate and measure change in the coming year. So we'll have some good data to bring back to you. But there are really a lot of opportunities. So if you haven't yet started this on your own, we'll be happy to share whatever we've found and learned in the last year. Thank you.